and welcome to a new year at the Second Court of Appeals. You probably see some faces up here that you're not used to seeing. So I want to introduce who your panel is today. To my right is Justice Elizabeth Kerr. Even though today is the anniversary of her first week on the Court of Appeals, she is not our newest justice, but this is her first argument, and I know she is just a fabulous addition that we're all so happy that she's here. And to my left is Justice Kerry Fitzgerald, who is sitting by assignment today, and we very much appreciate him being here, and I'm Lee Gabriel. We have three cases set for oral argument today, so appears as though the attorneys are ready to proceed. If the clerk will call the first case. Mr. Gilstrap.
May it please the court. This is post-divorce litigation. It was decided in the trial court on summary judgment, and I want to address first the argument that we made on pages 23 and 24 of our appellant's brief, which they have not answered. This involves our claim for partition. When parties are divorced, all of the property is supposed to be divided, but sometimes it's not. And when property is not divided, it is held by the former husband and wife as tenants in common and can be divided by a subsequent suit for partition. In this suit, we have filed a claim for partition. In our amended petition, is the claim, the pleading is the bottom of page 208 of the clerk's record. What is the undivided property? It's undisputed that there is undivided property.
Wait, it's undisputed? Let me ask you this, Mr. Gilstrap.
Yes.
When was the divorce granted?
The divorce was, the trial occurred on October 21st and 22nd of 13, and the rendition, which is when the divorce is granted and when the property is divided, was by written rendition on November 4th of 2013.
Actually, the rendition was in the courtroom on October 22nd, was it not?
No.
It didn't say the divorce is granted?
First of all, I don't believe that part of the transcript of the transcript of the trial is in the record. However, if he did say that, and I don't believe he did not divide the property.
But that's when community property is set, as of that date. And so if Newmark was created after that date, it would not be community property.
Well, you focused on one of the key issues, and you're correct. If the assumed name certificate was filed by Mark after rendition, then it is not community property. However, it is our position that it was filed before rendition because the court did not make a written rendition until November 4th. Remember,
do you have any case law that says it's the written rendition? If, let's just assume for argument's sake that
I don't have it either way, Judge. I'll concede that. I could not find a case either way, and we may be breaking new ground, but Judge Harris is an experienced judge, and he knows better than divide the property by oral rendition. He made a written rendition. I am not aware of any part of the record where Judge Harris says you were divorced in open court. And I don't believe it's in the record. I don't believe they brought it up. Obviously, you've got that particular point nailed. And we know what the issue is. It's undisputed that there's certainly other property that was not divided. These parties, this couple had been married for 28 years. They had a family business. They worked in it all the time. It was called Champion Striping, Champion Sweeping, and it swept and striped parking lots. It was good business. There was a receiver appointed. The receiver had a report saying that the property, the business, if sold together as a going entity, was worth $726,000. It's undisputed, however, that the receiver did not sell the business as a going entity. Why is disputed, but the fact that it wasn't sold as a going entity was not disputed. He sold it piecemeal. He sold the assets at an internet auction, and he sold all the tangible assets. He sold the supplies. He sold the equipment, that type thing. He admitted on deposition that he did not sell the intangible assets, which consisted of the Champion name, the goodwill, the customer list, and we say the name Newmark, which Mark took out a few days after the trial. Now, these assets obviously worth something, and they weren't sold. What happened after the divorce was Mark pays, by the way, not $726,000. He pays $200,000. And under the divorce decree, $150,000 of it went back to Mark, and he and Debbie, my client, only got $50,000. That's how the divorce decree was worded. Anyway, he sells the property. He goes into business. Same place, same name. He used the name Champion sometimes. Same phone number, same employees, same business. Well, we say that we're entitled to have certain intangible assets partitioned. The name, goodwill, the customer list, and Newmark. We pled for that on page 208 of the transcript. We made a claim for partition. They did not address that claim in their summary judgment motion. That should be the end of it. But the point is, if it was addressed, it clearly shouldn't have been denied because there's evidence that the property was not divided. We're entitled to partition. Now, the way this happened procedurally is this. We sued the receiver for fraud and negligence. We then turned around and added a claim against Mark. The receiver got out on summary judgment because he was immune. That was severed out. That's been decided. It's gone up on appeal. It's over. We don't have a claim against the receiver. We still have the claim against Mark. And anyway, the claim against Mark is, among other things, partition. They don't have a summary judgment ground against that. They get close in one respect. The only ground they have is because they filed their summary judgment motion before we amended. I mean, that's what happened here. And they have one ground. They say that, well, the claims are res judicata, and we're making a collateral attack. That's obviously wrong with regard to the partition claim. By definition, the claims for undivided property is not res, the divorce decree is not res judicata as to the claims for undivided property. That's the only claim they have.
Was it not?
What's that?
It was divided in the divorce decree. It's just your position that the receiver didn't effectuate that divorce decree properly.
You got it right again. The divorce decree told the receiver to sell all the assets.
So if it wasn't, so you really are going back to what occurred in the divorce because it was divided.
Well, it no, he told him to sell all the assets, and it didn't divide the assets.
It's 75-25 for the proceeds of the sale.
Proceeds, that's correct. It divided the proceeds. But it told the court to sell, the receiver to sell all the assets. The receiver didn't sell all the assets.
Well, Counselor, is the complaint really that the court's order telling the receiver what to do perhaps wasn't specific enough because it didn't include goodwill and customer lists and that sort of thing?
No, I thought it was specific enough. It said sell all the assets. It's just the receiver didn't sell them. So they obviously have not been divided. That's the wrinkle in this case that makes it somewhat different from other partition cases. So you've nailed down both the issues. One, what happens to Newmark? But that doesn't decide what happens to the case because Newmark's only part of the case. And second, somehow If the decree said sell all the assets and they didn't sell all the assets, did divide the decree and it somehow res judicata?
So isn't that really an issue for the divorce court? If you're trying to enforce the divorce court's decree that the receiver and or Mark somehow or another didn't properly follow the court's order, that would be an enforcement issue, would it not?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, if our position is that the assets haven't been sold, therefore they haven't gone through the 75-25 ringer, they're undivided. All right. Okay, I think you focused on both my issues, and let me just say this. They want you to rescue them by saying somehow, because they didn't move for summary judgment on our petition claim. And so the only way they can get there is if you decide that somehow the decree is res judicata. I think that's the only way that you can get there. I learned a long time ago not to tell the Court of Appeals that's what the only way is. But I believe that your only way to get there is via res judicata. If you can't get there, you must reverse, because that's the only ground that remotely speaks to our petition claim. If you have no further questions, I'll conclude. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Moore?
May it please the court. Morning, justices. I'll speak to the rather unorthodox approach that we have. This is a different change, and so I won't go through if what Mr. Gilstrap is saying is the partition is the big issue. I'll jump right to the fifth point in their appeal, which is, was there a problem in the court? Did the court err in not reforming or vacating its summary judgment order because of this partition and the five different claims that were presented in the fourth amended petition? The claims and allegations in the Logsdon case, which all but for the marriage and divorce of Deborah and Mark Logsdon, could not be in existence today. Everything goes back to the divorce. But the procedure was this. There was a divorce, a highly contentious divorce, in the 233rd District Court. Immediately after the cessation of trial, Judge Bill Harris granted the divorce. I think if I can direct your attention to page 18 and 19 of the appellee's brief, there are plenty of case law that says the Texas Supreme Court holds that the rendition of judgment is the pronouncement by the court of its conclusion and decisions upon the matter submitted for adjudication, which may be oral as well as written, and that judgment is rendered when the decision is officially announced, either orally in open court or by memorandum. That is Knox versus Knox. The citing is in my brief. On page 19, Williams versus Weirich, also cited, the validity and finality of an oral judgment by the court is predicated upon the supporting principle that the entry of a trial judgment, that signing, is simply a ministerial act. Judge Harris gave these people a divorce at the end of a, what we call in family law, a high conflict case. When we talk about this partition, these folks got a divorce on October 22nd. October 25th, Mark Logsdon filed to create a new business, New Mark. Deborah Logsdon didn't like the decision that the 233rd made. She appealed it. It came here to this court for the first of what I call the three Logsdon appeals. This court affirmed the decision of the 233rd in November of 2015. Before this court even had an opportunity to hear the appeal, Deborah Logsdon went to the civil court and filed against the court-ordered receiver, clearly completely derived from the family law case. She filed a breach of fiduciary duty and fraud. She shortly thereafter added Mark Logsdon as a co-defendant for breach of fiduciary duty and fraud. Then they filed a third amended petition, which added negligence as the third claim. The 96th District Court granted the summary judgment for Carrie Owens, the receiver. Deborah Logsdon filed an appeal to this court again in August of 2015. This court affirmed the summary judgment in June of last year. That brings us to the appeal of today. Mark Logsdon had a summary judgment hearing set for December 18, 2015. The summary judgment was based on the outstanding pleadings of Deborah Logsdon at that time. That was breach of fiduciary duty, fraud, and negligence. The 96th District Court granted the summary judgment on that. In the interim, Deborah Logsdon's attorneys filed a fourth amended petition, but that fourth amended petition, which had been pled and repled so many times, they put in the wrong respondent, and so it was ineffective as a fourth supplement, as a fourth amended.
Well, now, it did list Mark Logsdon as a defendant, and in the body of the pleading, it did ask for damages from Mark Logsdon. I understand what the prayer said, but in the body of the pleading, it did ask for damages from Mr. Logsdon, did it not?
I believe in the damages section, it asked for damages only from Carrie Owens. In the prayer section, it said, we want you to give us extraordinary damages against Mark Logsdon, but it did not plead for actual damages from Mark Logsdon. And that is the reason that the trial court did not go into any of the other. If Mr. Gilstrap's thought is correct, if anyone has some property, I can file a partition and say I want half of it, because the property was clearly separate property. The idea is...
Well, it's really... Okay, let's just take Newmark out of this discussion. Really, the goodwill, the customer list, and the name Champion, let's just focus on those three things.
I will.
His position is that the receiver was supposed to sell those pursuant to the divorce decree, and that the receiver did not sell them. So that, you have to agree that those three things were community property.
I do agree that they were community property. I don't agree that they had any value, and I don't agree that they were, that it is undisputed that they were divided. They weren't. The information that they're providing today is different than what they have ever argued. But if, in fact, there is a problem with what the court-appointed receiver did, this is an issue to be divided, to be addressed in the 233rd Judicial District Court, not in the 96th Judicial District Court, and not in the Second Court of Appeals. They have appealed the 233rd District Court. It has been affirmed. The issue of how Carrie Owens fulfilled his appointment as a receiver was reviewed by Judge Harris. He found no problem with it. That was an issue several times. It's been brought up. It's been decided. This issue of the value of the company, quite frankly, the transcript will show that Judge Harris asked, well, how much did the expert, the Brian Rice, the evaluator, how much did he think the company was worth? He gave a value. He said, how much can we sell it for? He gave a value, and quite frankly, what they garnered from the auction was more than the expert said they were going to get. They complain that she got a lesser amount after the auction. She got a lesser amount because the trial court found that she was guilty of fraud and did a just and right division under Schluter, not because someone cheated her. The issue of whether the name Champion Sweeping was sold, I mean, it's gone. She didn't want Champion Sweeping, and he didn't want Champion Sweeping, and Judge Harris ordered the court-appointed receiver to sell it. He did. He sold every bit of it. She bid on some things, and he bid on some things. They both bought parts of it.
How did the propriety of what the receiver did come back before Judge Harris?
They brought it up several times. We have been...
After the sale?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every time we get ready to divide, every time the receiver gets ready to make a sale, I can't think of the word I'm trying to say now.
Auction?
No, not the auction, but the payment. Every time he gets ready to pay out the proceeds from any part of this, they object. They have objected all along. And every time the receiver has gone back to Judge Harris and said, okay, what do you want me to do with this? How am I supposed to do this? The order said that Champion Sweeping was to be sold at the direction of the receiver.
Was there ever a complaint that the receiver did not sell Goodwill and should have before Judge Harris?
As I recall, they brought it up at, you may know this answer better than I believe that sometime in, I want to say that fall of 2016, maybe in the summer of 2016, there was a payment scheduled to be made by the receiver to both of these parties. That receivership has still not been finalized because, for lots of reasons that are not before the court today. But every time there's an attempt to make a payment, Ms. Logsdon complains about one thing or another. So the complaints about the receiver have been myriad. The complaints about everything have been myriad. But this is, she presented her case in trial. She appealed it. That's two bites. She filed in the 96th, and Judge Wallace issued the summary judgment for Carrie Owens. That's three. She appealed it here. That's four. She tried in the 96th against Mr. Logsdon. That's five. This is her sixth bite at the same apple. She keeps swinging at the same ball, and she keeps striking, but it's never ended. The issues, if there are any, should be in divorce court, not in the 96th, and not here.
But what about these other causes of action that weren't addressed in the motion for summary judgment that Judge Wallace apparently did grant summary judgment on? What is your position concerning those? Or explain it.
Our position is that those were not validly before the court because that pleading, the fourth amended pleading, was fatally flawed. I have a lot more, but I think those are the two issues that you all need to hear.
Okay, it's up to you. You've still got time. Any more questions?
I just had one question. You said that the name, the customer list, and the goodwill had no value.
There was an appointed business evaluator who testified that if the company were sold as a going concern, it might bring more. He couldn't guarantee that. But he also said that the value of selling the company was probably around $200,000. If it was a going concern, it was a lot more. But it wasn't a going concern because neither of the parties wanted the company. Ms. Logsdon wanted Mr. Logsdon to take it at her valuation and keep working it. And he said, I don't want the company. It's basically an at-will type business. They don't have long-term contracts. It's not into the years. If they don't clean a Walmart parking lot right, they don't get to clean it the next month. That's what the whole deal is. This client list was never an issue. She had access to the list just like he had access to the list. It was not something that the receiver or the business evaluator put any value on, and nor was that ever brought up at trial as, hey, we need to do something about this. So, no, that's an issue that's been created and fabricated because, but for the divorce between the Logstons, there would never have been the first appeal, nor the second appeal, nor this appeal. Thank you.
May it please the court. Counsel has corrected me. Judge Harris's pronouncement that you're divorced was before the court, page 146 of the clerk's record. However, he did not have any rendition of the property division. The case she cites, Knox, says that the rendition of judgment is the pronouncement by the court of its conclusions and decision upon the matter submitted for adjudication. He divorced them, but he didn't divide the property. What if the day after he pronounced it and before he signs the written rendition, which he did sign, it's quite long, what if he had aged out, hit 75? Office would be vacant. Would we have a rendition of the property division? That's the kind of issues I think that we get in with that. But that, again, that only talks about Newmark. Now, counsel got far out, speaking of the record, counsel got far outside the record. If it was their contention that all this stuff was decided by Judge Harris in other hearings that are not before the court, then the case should be remanded and she should be free to bring forward the record from the 233rd. But you can't affirm it, you shouldn't affirm it now because the record is simply not there. Let's talk about the pleading. First of all, we did plead for damages against the wrong person, but that's not the only relief we asked for. We asked for a declaratory judgment as to the assets of the property, as to the assets, the division of the assets, the division of the undivided assets. Now, got a case on that. And then, about 3 days before the divorce hearing, we cured that by amendment. And they say, oh my goodness, you didn't do it.
But you didn't get leave of court to file that.
Well, the record's silent on that. And here's what the law is. Where the record is silent, this is Supreme Court case Lee against Key West Towers, 783 Southwest 2nd 586. I'll send a letter with the court's permission with this citation. Where the record is silent of any basis to conclude that the amended petition was not considered by the trial court, and inasmuch as there was no showing of surprise or prejudice, leave of court is presumed.
Was that case a summary judgment situation?
I don't know that it was summary judgment, but it cites Goswami, which is a well-known case, which was summary judgment. That's the case that had the famous statement that a summary judgment's a trial. So, but if you don't raise it in the trial court, and there's no indication that anybody raised it in the trial court, the pleading's okay. And even if it's not, we still pled for partition. I also have a case going back to the rendition issue, and I'll give this to the court. It is Gaithe, G-A-I-T-H-E, 376 Southwest 3rd, 308. The issue of divorce and the issue of property division are not severable. So with the court's permission, I'll go ahead and send a letter with those citations and it will not contain any argument. And again, I appreciate your contention, your attention, and I'll go ahead and conclude. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, your case is submitted. We appreciate your briefing and your arguments here today. And with that, you are free to go. Thank you very much.